just 6 minutes, we're going to be talking to G. Edward Griffin, one of a whole bunch of radio stations, join us at 6 after. Can't wait to talk to him, a living legend, redpillexpo.org, redpilluniversity.org. Can't wait to get his take on the future and what we can do to take on the globalists. But here's part of a longer John Bound report he did. So we'll share part of it right now. Be sure and watch the whole thing at X, Real Alex Jones, on rumble.com/TheAlexJonesShow live and share it. But Bound report, the Uniparty agenda is pure treason. Here it is.
Gentlemen, ask for a recorded vote.
Yes, sir.
A recorded vote's requested. Recorded vote is ordered and will be postponed to a later date, later time.
Maybe a later date, too.
In a brazen display of foreign influence peddling that should send chills down the spine of every sovereign American, the House Armed Services Committee today advanced Section 224 of the Fiscal Year 2027 National Defense Authorization Act, the so-called United States-Israel Defense Technology Cooperation Initiative. As many called it, the first step toward merging U.S. and Israeli military capabilities in ways that will be nearly impossible to unwind, all while Americans foot the bill and watch their sovereignty erode.
Mr. Chairman, the American people are tired of the arrogance and insolence of Prime Minister Netanyahu telling America what we should do. The entire country of Israel has a GDP that is less than a single town in my district. Mr. Netanyahu actually wrote to a member of Congress to put this Section 224 into the bill. He says, I know that aid is unpopular in America. I know that even Republicans don't want aid. So here's what you got to do. Quote, let's create a new framework. This is Netanyahu telling us what we should do. A new framework of joint defense cooperation, co-development, co-production, and mutual investment in areas including advanced missile defense, artificial intelligence, cybersecurity, and next generation military platforms. Why? Because he doesn't want Congress to vote on the aid. He just wants it fused in the bill. Last I checked, Netanyahu doesn't have a seat on this committee, Mr. Chairman. We need to reject an amendment which is language is coming directly from the Israeli Prime Minister. And we ought to have any aid have a vote of the American people.
Israel is our closest ally in the Middle East, and our cooperative programs enhance U.S. national security by giving our warfighters access to cutting-edge technologies. Section 224 doesn't create any new programs within the Department of Defense. It simply designates a single senior office official to coordinate existing initiatives. Section 224 actually improves oversight and accountability of these programs by designating a single official responsible for them. Claims that this provision somehow cedes authority to a foreign government are simply ridiculous.
I strongly disagree with the notion that this is Congress just bowing to what Netanyahu wants. This is to our benefit. Now, I would suggest, and this just occurred to me this morning, we ought to be doing the same thing with Ukraine. Because Ukraine is another partner that is having to fight and learning. We should develop drone technology, counter-drone technology, counter-missile technology.
And then we should also remember the Hamas covenant of August 1988. And Article 7 provides to chase down every Jew behind a rock or tree until you find the last Jew behind a rock and kill him. That's their plan. But after that, they come after us. We already see that with the nuclear capability that Iran is trying to develop, with missile capability one day might even reach California. I yield back.
What it will do is build on an existing cooperative program that has been in place for years. And what it will ultimately do is help save American lives.
You know what? Stop right here. This Bound report's longer. And it's got all these excerpts from this hearing. This is so powerful. So after Edward Griffin leaves us, I'm going to play these excerpts from the hearing out of this report. But don't worry. If you're watching this as a tape, we'll play the whole report right now. This is just me live on air cutting in. You get the live show, you get the clips out of the show. But wow. I mean, you go read the bill. It says take over everything. Intelligence, DARPA, lifetime fusion of all of our systems. And then they go, oh, it's just a deal we already had. It's no big deal. No, Netanyahu says he'll never need congressional money again because he'll be a partner with the Pentagon. How does the Pentagon, it's already with all the runaway trillions missing, go partner with a foreign government famous for stealing all our secrets?
I want to start with sexual Tyrannosaurus Rex.
This is rocket fuel. This is incredible. This is rocket fuel. Because I'm a sexual Tyrannosaurus Rex. This is a cocktail I drink every day. A squirt of ultramethylene blue and T3. You are insane if you don't get it. Okay? Well, listen. You are insane if you don't get it. I am a wrecking ball. I am obsessed with this. I can't stop. And now I'm having this. Because I'm a sexual Tyrannosaurus Rex. This is the truth. Because I'm a sexual Tyrannosaurus Rex. You understand that? Does that burn into your brain?
I think I'm going to buy some methylene blue now.
TheAlexShow.com.
Discover trends and global developments years before they happen, right here on The Alex Jones Show.
All right, Deborah Griffin is connecting right now. And we just posted this report on X by John Bowen. I'm going to go back to the start of it and finish it here. But this is from the hearings yesterday where the Republicans moved the defense authorization bill forward. Netanyahu wrote Section 224. Go read for yourself, says all intelligence, live-time telemetry, our satellites, weapons development, everything is fused in at once. And the Netanyahu says we won't need money anymore from Congress because we'll be co-owners of the Pentagon's weapons. A foreign leader writing our legislation, and you see the lapdog Republicans and some Democrats spinning it and lying about what Section 224 of the 2027 National Defense Authorization Act does. Go read it for yourself. This is incredible. This is a foreign coup. Here's John Bowen's report, the J. Edward Griffin.
Gentlemen, ask for a recorded vote.
Yes, sir.
A recorded vote's requested. A recorded vote is ordered and will be postponed to a later date, later time.
Maybe a later date, too.
In a brazen display of foreign influence peddling that should send chills down the spine of every sovereign American, the House Armed Services Committee today advanced Section 224 of the Fiscal Year 2027 National Defense Authorization Act, the so-called United States-Israel Defense Technology Cooperation Initiative. As many called it, the first step toward merging U.S. and Israeli military capabilities in ways that will be nearly impossible to unwind, all while Americans foot the bill and watch their sovereignty erode.
Mr. Chairman, the American people are tired of the arrogance and insolence of Prime Minister Netanyahu telling America what we should do. The entire country of Israel has a GDP that is less than a single town in my district. Mr. Netanyahu actually wrote to a member of Congress to put this Section 224 into the bill. He says, I know that aid is unpopular in America. I know that even Republicans don't want aid. So here's what you got to do. Quote, let's create a new framework. This is Netanyahu telling us what we should do. A new framework of joint defense cooperation, co-development, co-production, and mutual investment in areas including advanced missile defense, artificial intelligence, cybersecurity, and next generation military platforms. Why? Because he doesn't want Congress to vote on the aid. He just wants it fused in the bill. Last I checked, Netanyahu doesn't have a seat on this committee, Mr. Chairman. We need to reject an amendment which is language is coming directly from the Israeli Prime Minister. And we ought to have any aid have a vote of the American people.
Israel is our closest ally in the Middle East, and our cooperative programs enhance U.S. national security by giving our warfighters access to cutting-edge technologies. Section 224 doesn't create any new programs within the Department of Defense. It simply designates a single senior office official to coordinate existing initiatives. Section 224 actually improves oversight and accountability of these programs by designating a single official responsible for them. Claims that this provision somehow cedes authority to a foreign government are simply ridiculous.
I strongly disagree with the notion that this is Congress just bowing to what Netanyahu wants. This is to our benefit. Now, I would suggest, and this just occurred to me this morning, we ought to be doing the same thing with Ukraine. Because Ukraine is another partner that is having to fight and learning. We should develop drone technology, counter-drone technology, counter-missile technology.
And then we should also remember the Hamas Covenant of August 1988. And Article 7 provides to chase down every Jew behind a rock or tree until you find the last Jew behind a rock and kill him. That's their plan. But after that, they come after us. We already see that with the nuclear capability that Iran is trying to develop, with missile capability one day might even reach California. I yield back.
What it will do is build on an existing cooperative program that has been in place for years. And what it will ultimately do is help save American lives, American service members' lives in particular, and strengthen U.S. national security. I yield back my time.
Every year, America gives billions of dollars of our money to fund Israel's military. Now, even Republicans, even Benjamin Netanyahu, are talking about changing that. But don't buy it. It's a shell game. What Congress is trying to do now is find different ways of entrenching the relationship so deep in America's own defense industrial base that it's impossible to root it out. A new section of law in the National Defense Authorization Act, or NDAA, would give Israel unprecedented access to American technology and would force the United States military to integrate Israeli defense technologies into our own critical military supply chain, giving Israel incredible leverage over America's own defense priorities. We need to stop this before it starts.
And for my colleagues who say that this vote is actually not about the actual provision, it is. Emerging technology is not an abstraction. It means cyber. And that is one field where we have already had to act against an Israeli firm for turning its tools on us. In 2021, the Commerce Department blacklisted NSO Group, the maker of Pegasus spyware, for malicious cyber activity against U.S. interests after its software was used to target government officials and journalists. Two administrations from both parties left it on that list. And that same company is right now trying to buy its way into the American market. Fusing our defense and technology sectors together permanently with no conditions in the exact area where we have already been burned is reckless on its own terms. And it would do it through a must-pass bill with almost no oversight and with none of the human rights conditions that govern the rest of our security assistance. We already have laws on the books that tell us what to do in this situation. The Leahy Law prohibits assistance to foreign militaries that have committed gross violations of human rights. The Foreign Assistance Act prohibits arms transfers to countries that are restricting U.S. humanitarian aid, and Israel has been consistently blocking and restricting humanitarian assistance. These laws exist, and they're not being followed or enforced. And instead of demanding enforcement, this committee is proposing we reward that conduct.
A question occurs on the amendment offered by Mr. Khanna. So many are in favor of his amendment will say aye. Those opposed say no.
No.
Pinch here, the noes have it. It fails.
Let's call it what it is, a captured committee greenlighting deeper entanglement as the $3.8 billion annual aid pipeline evolves into a congressional hostage situation. But that was only the beginning of the bought and paid for uniparty betrayal. Elsewhere, the will of 85% of the American people was defeated when the SAVE Act was hung out to dry by uniparty traitors, as four Senate Republicans joined in with the Democrats on the FU to the country. And not to be outdone, after walking our sovereignty down the plank and torching our election security, these criminals ended their night by passing the Ukraine Support Act, sending over $9 billion of our tax dollars overseas. John Bound reporting for the Alex Jones Network at alexjoneslive.com.
Very powerful report at alexjoneslive.com. Be sure and share it. Bound report, the Uniparty agenda is pure treason. And should have the subheadline, watch Congress block an amendment that would remove Israeli control of the Pentagon and U.S. intelligence. Folks, I've read the subsections. The experts have looked at it. It's only five pages. It says every facet of everything given to Israel, lifetime surveillance of everything, integration of all the weapon systems, and then profit sharing, saying if Israel contributes anything to our weapon systems, they get co-ownership and money from it. And Netanyahu says, I won't need money from Congress anymore. We'll just own part of your Pentagon. I mean, the boldness of this. This is just out of Israel. Poll. Anti-Netanyahu Zionist parties reached 62% seat majority first time without Arab support. This is the first time this is happening, spelling an end to Netanyahu. But he's been around 25 years playing paramilitary games. I wouldn't hold your breath yet. And they got people like Ben-Gvir, even worse than him. But, you know, everybody knows I've never been on the Israel beat. I mean, I suppose bad stuff Israel does and does some bad things. But I've been worried about, you know, the globalists and the Rothschilds and the Chi-Coms and the New World Order of the mad scientists. But Israel right now really is in this power vacuum trying to take over. We have him now, the legendary old friend of mine, G. Edward Griffin, redpillexpo.org, redpilluniversity.org, leading the movement to get grassroots citizens involved, educated, and taking action. He's pioneered full-length feature films, best-selling books since the 60s, exposing the whole globalist agenda. Just absolutely amazing, a living legend. Truly tomorrow's news today, and so I wanted to get him on about just the overall view of the world, where he sees things right now. Is he optimistic about the Great Awakening versus the globalist counterstrike of the Great Reset? His take on all these wars, the whole cashless society rolling out, AI, you name it. And coming up, we'll play a promo for it, the Red Pill Expo coming July 11th and 12th in Las Vegas. Amazing event. In fact, I'll probably try to be there. Been invited many times, but always been pinned down here, but maybe this time I'll be able to be there. G. Edward Griffin, so wonderful to see you, my friend. Thank you for the time today.
Well, Alex, thank you for being patient, and I'm sorry I'm tardy, but believe it or not, I guess it's my 94 years is finally catching up with where I am. So anyway, thanks for being patient. It's my pleasure and honor to be on your show again.
You also pioneered, back before anybody else was doing it, a health food nut, a vitamin mineral nut, a alternative cancer treatment nut, and everything you talked about in the 60s, 70s, 80s has all been vindicated now. So quite the pioneer we're looking at right here, brother. And hey, I was glad when I heard you were at the lake having a good time and forgot about the show. At 94, that's the secret. You out there having a little bit of fun, huh?
Oh, don't I wish. Yeah, I do have to have a... Well, you know, that's the truth. I honestly, I used to joke about it, but now I honestly believe it. If you can't have fun doing it, then don't do it. That's life is too short. So,
well, I've been doing this 32 years, and I feel young, but also feel like it's been a million years, but also just one day. It's kind of a paradox. But to see how long have you been fighting the globalists? I mean, I know the story, but why don't you guys pull up some of his vintage films, like G. Edward Griffin, Katanga, or you just type it in, or what's some of your other vintage films?
Oh, gosh, there's so many things. I've done things on the United Nations, on U.S. foreign policy, even Noah's Ark. Now, that's a little bit off the normal path. But, yeah, I started out on a political crusade when I discovered what was really going on in the world. And then I discovered the health field. A good friend of mine, Dr. John Richardson, ran into trouble with the government because he was saving lives, cancer patients. And they didn't like that idea because he was using a substance that was not approved. Heavens, you can't save somebody's life unless it's approved, you know. So I got into the health field, and first thing you know, I was supposed to be an expert on cancer. Well, that's a joke because I'm the last person in the world to write about these things. But unfortunately, you know, I saw this clip that you were running before I came on and talking about the foreign policy of the United States and Israel and all the kabunchery that was going on. That's been going on forever, and it's just amazing me how long it's taking for people to see it. And so I guess my problem, if you want to call it that, and I think it's justly so, is that I have a crusader gene. And when I see these things happening, I think, by golly, I'm going to change that. And so there off I go. Anyway, I've had a lot of those, Alan, and they've been on many topics. And right now I think it's probably the most exciting time in all history, I might say that. Maybe people always say that when they're living through something. But I really think what's happening in the world today is going to make the biggest change to the human race of any period that we know of that the Earth has been through. So I don't know how that happens. I just follow my instincts.
Incredible. Are you optimistic about where humanity is right now? Because obviously when you were first doing this, maybe 1% knew what was going on. I'd say 30-40% now are at least somewhat aware of the whole globalist agenda. I mean, so in one way I'm optimistic, but then I also get frustrated as the truth all comes out when you get vindicated. And still the persecution of us continues. Still the bad guys just grind on.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that, because that is, I think, the most important part about this whole picture is no matter how many exposés we have, no matter how much real information is leaking out and then suddenly hitting the front pages, no matter how much truth is bubbling up, it just grinds on. And that's, I think, part of the plan. But anyway, back to your question, I think, am I optimistic or not? I am not optimistic, nor am I pessimistic. I like to think of myself as being realistic, which has a little bit of both in it. And what I mean by that in terms of our era today is that many ways of saying it. Old time sayings usually are, if you never get burned, you will get burned. In other words, you have to feel the pain before you learn the lesson. And I think it's,
you got to learn how to lose to learn how to win.
You don't know what losing is until you lose. And you say, I don't want to do that again. The reason I'm bringing that up is because I think in most of my life, I was born into the America that I read about in the school books. I thought I was. And then I discovered later on that wasn't true. I found out that our government had largely been infiltrated, you might call it. It's been affected, infiltrated, taken over in essence by people who were not really Americans in the sense of what their ideals were. They might be American citizens, but they're all of a sudden they were turning into the view of the global theater. They wanted to be global leaders, not American leaders, and they felt that America had too much advantage, and they wanted to whittle it down and bring it to her knees so she could join all the rest of all the other countries and all the other world. And then the new world order, the government, you know, the world government would be the new thing. And so a lot of our leaders that we thought were our leaders were not. They were really leaders for the new world order. And we were just a free ticket because we had a lot of money. And so they're still going on. They take our money and then squirt us in the face, you know.
And so, that's anyway, their cover story that they're redistributing to be loving and good. The truth is, when you get deeper in their documents, they're cold-blooded eugenicists, transhumanists, post-humanists, antinatalists, who are just absolutely, at the end of the day, psychotic Satanists.
I couldn't disagree with you more. Only thing I would add, one more word to it as part of my crusade, I would add the word collectivist. Now, that sounds like very bland compared to your list of names. What is a collectivist and who cares? Well, one of the things I became aware of a long time ago is that the problem with the liberty movement, if you want to call it that, I always have trouble trying to find a good name for it. But the trouble for the ideology of liberty and freedom is that nobody knows how to define it. I came to the realization somewhere way, way back that, you know, Karl Marx had his Communist Manifesto and Das Kapital books. You could read what Karl Marx said about communism and socialism. And, you know, Adolf Hitler wrote his Mein Kampf. You could read what was fascism and Nazism all about. You know, it's all there. But the people who, like, what we represent, the idea is liberty and freedom. We have no statement of principles that what we believe in. All we do is just call names to other people. You know, they're the bad guys. I'm not saying any of the words that you use are wrong, because
that's
right.
We can't just oppose collectivism and all the forms of tyranny that come with their gang rule. We have to have an alternative system to challenge it.
And where is it? And so I'm working on a new book. I didn't tell anybody until recently, but I'm on a rip now. I want to get this thing done while I can, and it deals with that. We need a manifesto, and so I'm working on the book, and I can leak the title.
This
to
sounds
you.
Like it's going to be your magnum opus or something.
I hope so. It might be my magnum dopus. I don't know, but I'm really working on it, and I think I'm onto a track, and I'm calling it The Human Manifesto, An Idea Whose Time Has Come. And
funny, when you said you didn't know a name for it, I was on with Elon Musk a few years ago, and he says, I don't know how you define our movement that's pro-natalist and pro. I said, it's Team Humanity. I mean, it's just, we're on Team Humanity, common sense, what's normal, what's wholesome, what's pro-human. I mean, so I think the new book, name of your book is awesome. Say the name again.
Well, The Human Manifesto.
Right.
It's not a communist manifesto. It's not a political ideology. It's a human ideology. And that's what freedom is all based on. And anyway, I'm working like crazy on it. I'm having fun doing it. And I can hardly wait to get it out there. It's going to be, an amazing journey for people who are concerned about these things and have our view that the human is the center of things and not the collective, not the mechanism of a lot of people and big numbers and those with the most money and those with the most cannons and bullets and bayonets. No, those who are the most human, I could go on and on and on. But anyway, I like all the words you used, but people have trouble defining them. I mean, when I think about what our enemy, and I call our enemy the collectivists, and by that I mean you find collectivists in every country, and they're united on that, country to country. You find them in every religion, no matter what religion is, there are collectivists there, and they're usually the ones at the top. You find them in every race. You find them in every cross-section of society, and they're there everywhere. That's why we have trouble trying to name these people. We say, well, oh, they're the Americans, or they're the Chinese, or they're, those bad people's over there in some country, you know. Maybe Cuba, who knows, that's closer, you know. And so people start thinking of their opponents as racial groups or national groups.
No, I agree. I always try to make it about the policy and what they stand for. So why don't you define a collectivist and how they operate? Because the average person thinks a collectivist is the poor person getting a welfare check. No, the ultra-rich historically are the real collectivists, feudalism, where they collect it all from us and divvy it out on top, making themselves in control.
That's absolutely correct, and it's a secret, because most people, even in our ranks, if you want to call them that, will say that... Well, they don't know what capitalism is. They think that capitalism is just having a lot of money. And that's not true. Capitalism is not anything to do with how much money you have. It has to do with what kind of a society, an economic system you want to live under. And the wealthiest people in the world are not capitalists by pure definition. They're collectivists. They don't believe in competition. They believe in monopolies, you know? And it slays me when... And I hear people trying to come up, struggle with words to describe their enemy, and they usually wind up just saying, well, they're the bad guys and we're the good guys. That's what it amounts to. And there, in a nutshell, is the reason we have been losing this bloody war and the reason that nothing is being changed, even though we're saying, look how bad it is. Oh, here's another. Oh, it's worse than we thought. Oh, but it still goes on and on and on, because we're not picking out the collectivists who are running the show, because some of them are on our team, we think. I mean, I'm just going to say it the way it is. How many of the Republicans that are involved in this battle, and they think they're battling the Democrats, what is the difference between those two groups, aside from their rhetoric? When it comes time to vote, they're in unity on all the principles, political and social principles, but they never talk about principles. They just talk about, well, we're Republicans or Democrats, or we're for liberty or we're for tyranny, you know, and those people are evil and we're good. And that's how the world has been running, is who are the good guys and who are the bad guys. And so
I know this. I mean, I was never delusional about Trump, and I saw him doing some good things compared to Democrats. But at the end of the day, the deep state came back in, and now he is worse than ever. And so we can get your take on that and talk about collectivist versus independent free team humanity people. And then look at all these decades later, the Federal Reserve still there. All that's happening, and now they're bringing in their new system of central bank digital currencies. The legend, G. Edward Griffin, is our guest. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Be sure to check out his website when we come back. We have the very best, strongest methylene blue from a medical-grade company that produces it for medical firms. Instead of using radioactive iodine, you know, to track stuff before surgeries, they're more and more using methylene blue. So I told Big Lad, I said, get me wherever the highest rated is. So they spent like 6 months and said, where is it? And they said, oh, this is a medical firm in Florida. They don't even sell this for human consumption, though it's great for that. And I'm like, okay, great. So some bottles of it came in, sat there about a week. Because I'd taken methylene blue before, barely felt any energy, knew it was really good for your mitochondria. And, you know, so it's time to sell it. We're going to do it. Kennedy's promoting it. This is a year and a half ago, almost years ago. They're like, hey, boss, you know, it's coming out tomorrow. You got to cut the ads. And I'm like, well, I haven't tried it yet. This better be good. And so... the show ends, and I had a glass of iced tea, just like I do today, okay? And I take one dropper and put it in the iced tea. And so I only drink half the iced tea. So I took half a dropper, and all of a sudden I'm like feeling warm and like electricity in my hands. I'd forgotten I'd taken it because I'm busy doing stuff at the show. And I go into the bathroom and I take my shirt off, and I turned red. Not like hives, like I was. It was distributed. I'm already pretty tan. You know, tan good is a little bit Native American. The benefits of that, but I was like even redder, and I was like, "What is this?" And I'm like, "Electricity." I go, "Oh, that's what people say methylene blue does if it's really good." And I was like, and I started feeling so good. I was like, "This is kind of scary." And about an hour into it, I go, "I hope this stops because it was getting too good." That happened to Derek. He took it and said, "I'm scared to take it. I just thought he was on acid." So it's psychoactive everything, okay? I mean, this is not a freaking game, okay? It skips the oxygenation process, two steps in the cells, and all this other wild stuff. And so my medical doctor 6-7 years ago, wellness clinics all over the state, he's got like 5, 6, 7, 8 degrees. It's ridiculous. He said, "And by the way, I want you to get methylene blue. It'll be USP grade. Just get it wherever. Just make sure it's USP grade, meaning it's, you know, medical grade." And I ordered it and tried it and really didn't feel any energy. But I'm sure it was good for me, but I'd forget to take it. So I was like, "Okay, everybody wants methylene blue. I know it's good. We'll get it. We'll sell it. Get the best." I take this, and it is nothing like any methylene blue I ever took. I mean, it is strong. It's amazing. But just like Group told me with the pure atomic iodine that it would do great stuff with my skin, those liver spots I had, you can go back to shows 14, 15 years ago before Group came along, and you can see those spots I had. They're gone, baby. Gone, literally gone. It's amazing. But within 2 weeks of taking the methylene blue, the guy I trained with was like, "Hey, are you on something? Did you get a steroid prescription or something?" I was like, "No." And he goes, "Well, what's going on? I mean, you're losing weight even quicker, and now you used to have trouble doing 10 pull-ups, and you just did 20. And man, you're like pushing like on the leg press twice what you were a month ago. What the hell's going on, dude? You're like glowing." And Sean Johnson told the story, and I said, "It's methylene blue." He's a former Navy SEAL, Navy SEAL trainer, all that. He took it, gave his testimony about how within 30 minutes he was all zinned out and it was crazy and everything. This stuff really works. Now, when you first take it, you get the crazy effects psychologically. You always feel the energy some, but as it builds up, it's not even a tolerance. It's when your body hasn't had this, it really notices it first. But the first time you take it, I say take a quarter dropper. Talk to your physician, too, because if you're on SSRIs or some other drugs, it'll make you jump off a building. I mean, people have taken methylene blue when they're on Prozac and they jump off buildings. Okay, that's rare. Usually women just pull their clothes off and start having orgies and stuff. I mean, I'm serious, okay? I mean, like, you want to go cuckoo town, take this with SSRIs and you're going to cuckoo town because that's how strong this is, okay? That's what this does, and we know it's good for you. But this is not a joke, okay? I don't sell crap.
Weeks and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
Discover trends and global developments years before they happen, right here on The Alex Jones Show.
Look on screen, Key Edward Griffin. I'm telling you, folks, I don't care about basketball players and movie stars, but if it wasn't for people like him and that of that whole group of people, they're all gone. He is the last man standing of folks since the 60s fighting the globalists and that big wave we had then, and he was one of the most prominent, if not the most prominent. So many best-selling books, so many films, so many conferences, so many interviews, and I know this. The awakening's huge. We're starting to get the upper hand. I'm very optimistic overall, just from the realism of what we know. But if it wasn't for people like G. Edward Griffin, we would not have a fighting chance in hell right now. And I'm just so blessed. The internet was coming along right when I started getting on air in 94, 95, 96, local radio, all of it. And to see what we've done together, and I know there's people out there in the audience who may do small things, big things, doesn't matter. But we need to understand what's going on and expose it. You have the Davos group and all of them admitting the world's turned against us. Everybody hates us. Bill Gates is like a 99%, you know, negative rate. So I am optimistic because of what we have in front of us. But we've got to know these different globalist power blocks are going to pull out the stops. So, Jim Griffin, I got to ask a million questions here. Since you got a little bit late, you're in a little bit the next hour with us, and I appreciate you being gracious to do that. But let's talk about solutions first. So I want to do this right in the middle of the interview, then get into a bunch of big issues. Red Pill University started many years ago, so important. The Red Pill Expo, you only do a couple times a year or once. And that's coming up in July. I have a little promo here we're about to play, one-minute promo for Red Pill Expo, which I've attended telephonically before. But I do want to try to get to this one this year, because I promise you I would soon. So let's go ahead and play that short little promo for the Red Pill Expo coming up July 11th and 12th in Las Vegas this year. Here it is.
Tired of being misled by the mainstream narrative? It's time to take the Red Pill and discover perspectives you won't hear anywhere else. Join us at Red Pill Expo 2026, happening July 11th and 12th in Las Vegas, Nevada. Hear from researchers, doctors, journalists, and speakers from around the world as they discuss global events, media narratives, health, technology, freedom, and much more. Whether you attend in person or watch online from the comfort of your home, Red Pill Expo gives you the opportunity to explore ideas and information outside the mainstream conversation. The event will be live-streamed, and you can register for free online access today, or join us live in Las Vegas for the full experience. Visit redpillexpo.org to reserve your ticket, get event details, and make your plans for Red Pill Expo 2026.
So talk about what the redpilluniversity.org does, and then this expo, and then I want to go where you want to go, because you've been a true visionary, and it's just great to have you here. And I got some of my questions I want to hit. I noticed you started going into Israel. And you and I both have always said oppose ideology, don't make it about a group. But Israel clearly, openly, is doing something China wouldn't do, the EU wouldn't do, because they can hide behind the anti-Semitism thing. They are really making a run at primarying anybody that doesn't want unlimited money to Israel or war, at taking over and merging with the Pentagon and research and development. I mean, I'd be aware of our own military-industrial complex. Eisenhower warned up. Now it'll be the U.S.-Israeli military-industrial complex. I mean, this is crazy.
It is crazy from our point of view, and yet we put up with it. And why is that? Well, it's because we're not in control. We're given quite a bit of leeway still on the ability to talk about it and complain about it and make recommendations about it and call for action and all of that. But when it comes to removing the collectivists who are in positions of authority, we don't know how to do that. We don't have any idea how it came to pass. We don't know how to undo it. Well, I think we do. It's just that it's not being allowed. If I were to try and put up everything I think I know about the very thing I'm talking about, how they took over our country from the top down, not from the bottom up, but from the top down, well, both, actually. It was the pincers movement, because they took over the educational system a long time ago to train all the future leaders, which they've succeeded now in doing. So it's a strategy that they have achieved, and they wrote about it in those old days. I ran across all these old books back in the day when all the tycoons were taking over everything, and it was no longer money. It was political. There was a change that the banking fraternity decided they had all the money. In fact, they succeeded in getting Congress to allow them to make the bloody stuff. Now they make the money. People think the Federal Reserve System is a government agency. It ain't. It's a private cartel. People don't know that. They still don't know about it. Many of them don't want to know about it. That's the problem. They could go on with all the problems. But now we come to the question of what are we going to do about it? And I think that the secret is to, first of all, get an ideology that we can all say to each other, we believe in that. This is what we're fighting for. This is the idea, what we're willing to fight for, what we're willing to die for, if necessary. You know, we have to know what we believe in.
And by the way, we've done it before. You with Ron Paul, but you were the original impetus of it. He made it about audit the Fed, get rid of the Fed, don't have a foreign bank that's private running us. He almost became president just off that. That just shows the focal point of hey, we don't want Israel running us. We don't want a foreign bank running us. We don't want an out of control DC ignoring us. And so that's what the Red Pill University is about, is that ideology of what we stand for that transcends race and all this other stuff, so we can unify around issues and then say
exactly. Yeah. But we have to have our own ideology. And how many people do we know? And if you ask them, well, what does liberty mean? What would you think they'd say? They'd probably go, well, it means not being in jail. To them, many people, being free is simply not being in jail.
And so give us your expert definition of what human freedom is.
Well, that now we come to the creed of freedom. And it'll take a moment to cover it all, but I can summarize
it. No, take your time. I'm gonna sit back and shut up. Go ahead.
Well, don't do that, Alex. All the exciting part would be out of this thing. Well, okay, what is collectivism? It's a battle, actually, between collectivism, and the opposite is called individualism. Those are the only two ideologies in the world, when you really cut all the garbage away and get down to the bones and the heartbeat and so forth. There are only two ideologies in the world, and it's individualism versus collectivism. And all these other words like communism, socialism, fascism, Nazism, New Dealism, or whatever, people move, titles around because they sound good, and nobody really knows how to define them. So I decided years ago I had to see if it was possible to pull together all the great ideas that in that time of period I was learning. I made myself go and to the library and start to learn about what are these ideologies, and read a lot of these old books, a couple of hundred years old. And I was amazed to find out that these books had the word collectivism in them and the word individualism in them. I never read those words in our modern literature. And I discovered that they were systematically removed about the period between World War I and World War II, because they were too clear. It established principles. And the people who we're talking about, I call them the collectivists, didn't want us to understand who they were and what they believed. They wanted us to just worry about, well, who are you going to vote for? You know, you like, who's running? Oh, let's see. Oh, I like this guy. Oh, he's Republican? Oh, I'll vote for him. Yeah, that's what they want us to do, because it's nothing. It's nothing. We're like putty in their hands with that kind of an outlook. Anyway, back to the main topic. What is collectivism? What is the ideal of liberty? And I'm glad you gave me a little bit of time, because I want to explain how I came to this understanding. It was back, by the way, my tuning in started in 1960. I remember it very clearly. That's what I was shaken out of my complacency and my stupidity about everything, just about everything. And so I remember I was working for a large insurance company at that time, and we were putting together group insurance policies for corporations with 25 employees or more. Some of them, we had thousands of employees. And it was my job with the insurance company to do the work and develop special programs for corporations. And I was climbing the corporate ladder, or so I thought. And then I got sidetracked. I read something, and somebody handed me a pamphlet about the United Nations. And it was written by a college professor in some Midwestern university. I don't remember the name of it now, but the title of the pamphlet, I believe, was The Truth About the United Nations. And of course, when I read this thing and I saw that the author was saying that the United Nations was a fraud, and that everything it said, it actually meant the opposite. And it was fooling people, thinking that by promising to put an end to war and poverty and injustices of all kinds, and save little children from serious diseases and all these good things we were being told about the UN, and now this guy says that it's bad and that they were lying. I was really outraged by that. And so I went to the library. I started to read about it, and I found out, by golly, this professor was right. But anyway, to make a long story a little bit shorter, it was in that period that I decided to do a little nudging around on my own. So everybody's worried about communism in those days. I mean, communism had taken over Russia, taken over China, had taken over countries in South America, and had taken over Cuba right there at our doorstep. And we saw communists marching in the streets here in America. Communism was a big problem, at least I thought. And it was. I mean, it was, everybody was concerned about communism. So I became an anti-communist, naturally. I couldn't understand why people kept falling for communism when history was so plain that every time communism came to power in some nation, there was mass genocide. Millions of people got assassinated because they disagreed with the new regime. And private property was confiscated, and all the things we know about. And the nations usually went into poverty. Production came to a halt, and all kinds of injustices and everything. How come with this history right out in front of us, were people still buying into communism? So I decided to go down to the communist bookstore in Los Angeles. It's called the People's Bookshop on Larchmont Street. And I started hanging out with the comrades. Now, remember, I'm a young guy. I'm about 29 or something like that. And I'm looking like a wannabe businessman. I got my suit on, a little narrow tie, and my sideburns. You know, I was in style at the time. And I walk in like that to a communist bookstore. And I was out of place, you might say. They were very suspicious of me, but they finally decided that I might be a prospect because I demonstrated quite clearly that I was interested in reading their books. I wanted to find out what their motives were and so forth. So I went back multiple times, and they tried to recruit me actually into the system, and I didn't pull any punches with them. I said, I'm really interested in what you guys have to say. So they were selling me all these books, and I bought them all, including all the volumes I could find of the works of Vladimir Ilyich Lenin, who was really the author of communism, as far as I'm concerned, more so than Karl Marx. But anyway, I read all the things I could find written by Lenin, and I discovered an interesting thing, Alex. I discovered that the people pushing those books on me had not read them. It was amazing. They had not read them because I would ask them questions about certain features and they wouldn't know what I was talking about.
And so, I've discovered the same thing. I went in college, the commie meetings, and I've gone out to demonstrations. They never know anything. They just hear it. They're going to get a bunch of free stuff. But when you actually read the books, they even tell you it's super cold-blooded. And what's crazy is I've gotten to know like a bunch of the top Russians. And I've confirmed a whole bunch of stuff, but they come on and they know that the British intelligence and sent in the Bolsheviks. They know that was a program of control now. And did you know Putin even talks about it and talks about how communism was an outside disease planted over there? So I always hear, oh, they're really faking that they're not commies still. And still there's some of that. But no, I know a bunch of the top Russians. And they all say, we're with Alexander Solzhenitsyn. And at least that internally, and Putin said it publicly, that Alexander Solzhenitsyn, he was secretly reading Solzhenitsyn when he was in the KGB. I'm not lionizing Putin. I'm just saying I talked to Dugin and to Boot and all these people that nobody else you talks to, and they sound like you, actually. That's wild.
Well, yeah, they know what they're doing, and they're proud of it. They don't necessarily hide it because they know from experience that most people don't give a damn, and they're not interested. You can tell when I start to talk about these things, I can tell within about 30 seconds whether I got someone who's interested or not. And, when the eyes get glazed and they're sort of looking off and over your shoulder.
But bottom line, you confirm what the John Birch Society had said, but did even deeper research, because I've read your books and watched all your films, that it was the ultra-elite rich funding communism. Explain how that works.
Well, yeah, because those people are collectivists. That's my topic, actually. That's why I went to the communist bookstore to find out what all these crazy things that I was seeing. The richest people I could think of were actually promoting communism, and I thought they were communists. And that's the thing. I thought they were communists because they were promoting communists and communism. Well, that makes sense. Why wouldn't they be? Well, I had to get educated to find out they weren't promoting communists. They were promoting collectivism. It was the ideology, and that communism is merely one variant of it. And socialism, another variant of it.
It's mainly fascism. A mechanism to get there. And if you read even what Obama said when he was leaving office, he said, look, we use communism to consolidate control, but then there's an international elite that controls it for everyone's good. So it's ultra-rich, collectivizing, enslaving people, the new feudalism they call freedom, but then the elites sit internationally above it, controlling it and traffic copying it.
That's as good a summary as I could think of. It's always that small group at the top, primarily centered, I think, around the banking fraternity, because let's face it, the money, control over the money, creation of money is the greatest power I think there is, even more so than atomic weapons, because if you've got the money, you can have the atomic weapons. But if you have the atomic weapons, you might not get the money, but that's another argument. But anyway, yeah, power is can take many forms, but the strongest form, in my view, is money, because that is a way that you can commandeer, you can take away from people their freedom of action, their choices, their everyday.
Well, the Club of Rome admits they said in the 70s, we're going to make everybody poor, break up the family, so there's not enough money even to take care of a family, and then now that's where we are. I mean, it's very simple.
Well, it is very simple. That's what we're going through. We have been going through that, actually, for quite a while. They wanted to, that's why I said earlier, they wanted to bring America to her knees. People who were independent had money in their pocket, their money, not the government's money, but their money. And they were free to snub their nose at the government if they wanted to. Say, well, I'll just, I'll heck with you guys. Okay, here's your money. I'll pay your taxes. Get out of my way, you know. But the object was to remove that independence on the part of the people and make them totally dependent on the state. So that
because collectivism is really domestication.
Yes, it's domestication. No, let's get to the part. I'm going to jump ahead a little bit.
Yes, sir.
After going through that deal with the communist bookstore and all that, I started to make a list of all the principles, not the slogans. The slogans were, the slogans, from each according to their ability, to each according to their need, rah, rah, rah. We are against racism and war, rah, rah, rah. Sign me up. I'm all for all the slogans. And that's how these guys over at the communist bookstore had been suckered into it, because of the slogans. They didn't ask any further questions. Listen, they didn't ask him, how do we do this? Anyway, make it long story short. So I started making a list of the principles, the actual ideology of what I thought was communism, and then I discovered later it was collectivism, the same principles, and anyway, that's what my point. I made a list of about 12 of them, and there were about six that were really, really strong. And then I wondered, well, what's the opposite of this? I had learned in school that the opposite of communism, which was the extreme left, would be fascism or Nazism, the extreme right. All right, makes sense. I thought it would.
But it's totally false. It's another brand of collectivism.
Yes, it is. But I didn't know that. I thought since Stalin and Hitler fought each other and hundreds of thousands of lives were lost in a war between communism and Nazism, they had to be opposed to each other. What a shock it was to find out when I finally got hold of Mein Kampf and read Hitler's book, and I lined those principles up with the ones that I had copied out of all the works that came from the communist side. They were exactly the same. And that was a jolt that really got me serious about this whole thing. And I thought, if I could have been fooled on that, to think that communism and Nazism were opposites, because that's what it said. Everybody told me that, and therefore it was true. When I could fall for that, I could fall for anything. So that's really how it all started. And so then I made a list of these principles, Alex, and I'll just give you an idea. There are two principles I'd like to mention. The one is perhaps the most easy to understand, and that is that collectivists, how shall I say this? Collectivism is the concept that the group is more important than the individual and must be sacrificed. The individual must be sacrificed, if necessary, for the greater good of the greater number. That is a rock-solid principle of collectivism.
And Spock always taught that on Star Trek.
Everybody teaches it. Every university teaches it. Every schoolroom teaches it. Every nation in the world has adopted it. 99% of the people on the planet believe it. All right? But they don't know it's called collectivism. They don't know about the rest of it either. But it just sounds so good. I was taught it at the university. I thought it was a great idea. It's what sounds so good. You know, from each according to your ability, to each according to your need is a slogan, you know? But anyway, so that was one principle. That describes collectivism. That is, that the group is more important than the individual. And if you step out of line and it can be said by someone in authority, well, it's too bad about you, but we got to get rid of you because you are impeding society.
And that's what they said with COVID. You are non-essential. We're saying you're not needed. So really, it's a license to kill and enslave whoever you want. Because you get rid of individual liberties, that's the cellular level. There is no liberty.
That's right. You said it very well. At the cellular, there is no. The secret is that what is the group? I don't remember anybody writing that, but I remember when I was taking my notes, I wrote on the side, what is a group? If the group is more important than an individual, then what is a group? And it came to the amazing conclusion that the group does not exist the way humans do. Humans are real. They're physical.
No, it's a way to get individuals to give their individualism. You then have the cult leaders of the so-called group funded by globalists above it that you think you're in a collective, but you're really in a slave grid.
Yes. They can sell it. It sounds so good. That's our enemy is so good at slogans. That's the thing. Yeah, but I realize there's no such thing as a group. The group is an abstraction of the mind. It doesn't exist. You can't touch it. You can't burn it. You know, a group is an abstraction. And how is it? You know, it doesn't even exist. And it's like the number seven. How can the number seven, just the number seven, the concept of seven of something, it's an abstraction. Only the mind can recognize seven. How can that recognition have a power or a right, a human right, let's say, that humans don't have? And it's like, this is crazy,
it's a way of
man.
Transferring individual liberty into a collective controlled by an elite.
It's a way of fooling people into thinking that giving up their liberty is the right thing to do. That's the bottom line. And they do an excellent job of that because you're supposed to be compassionate and you're supposed to make sacrifices on behalf of other people. It's Christian principles and so forth. And
which is good when you do it individually on your own researched will, but you're now making sacrifices directed by someone else.
Yes, and you're paying for it. They direct it and you pay for it. And sometimes the help that they're delivering to the underdog turns out not to be the underdog.
Oh, like they all fly around in jet airplanes and are filthy rich with 10 kids, but you can't have air conditioning or medical care. Oh, but you're doing it for the earth. You're a collectivist. Back in 2 minutes with the incredible G. Edward Griffin. We got more time with this guy. We got to get him on more. He's going right back to basics here. And remember, the globalists are on record. The collectivists are on record. They know this is a fraud. Call it crony capitalism. Call it whatever you want. It's slavery. It's anti-human. And it wants us all absolutely under its boot. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Tonight at midnight, Alex Jones was thrown out and locked out of his InfoWars studio along with his crew after the 8-year-long legal battle trying to shut him down and censor him is coming to a close. And liberal media are celebrating with headlines like this. The lights go out at Alex Jones InfoWars, and InfoWars.com, the domain name, now has a message that just says off air. But these people don't know anything about Alex Jones, because if you just go to AlexJonesLive.com, the website looks very similar to the old InfoWars website. And look at there! There is a live feed of his show, the Alex Jones Show, now just not using the InfoWars name, where he is continuing. It hasn't missed a beat. If you go to the Apple App Store and the Android App Store and search for AJN Live, you can download the new Alex Jones Live app, where you can still listen to his show streamed live on your phone. Or you can just find and follow Alex Jones on Twitter, X, where he still has 4.5 million followers, because despite the lawyer's attempts to try to take his personal account, they failed. And you can see there the live icon around his profile photo shows that he is live streaming the show there on repeat 24/7.
There is a war raging for the future of humanity. We have opened a new front at alexjoneslive.com. They thought they could silence us, They thought they could drive us off the air. They failed. We are back, stronger, louder, unbroken. Find the feeds. Hear the broadcast. Share the signal. AlexJonesLive.com. The coordinates of freedom.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle, AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.